I would like to propose a podcast in which lesbians from all over the world can listen to lesbian affairs, and that can include anything from flannel shirts to cats, cat litter, cat sitters, hot cat sitters, lesbian affairs itself, politics, radical lesbians, veganism, non-veganism, anything. Welcome to A Lesbian Affair.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode. It's another week, another day in lockdown hell, or if you're enjoying it, in lockdown paradise. I think I'm personally kind of getting there. I don't enjoy it anymore. I want to go out and play in the sun and see my friends. But I'm very happy that today I'm joined by JJ and Lara, who are in lockdown together. Hi, guys. Can you just kind of, for our listeners out there, tell me a little bit about yourselves? Who are you? Who are you people?
Who are we people?
Yeah. Hi, Lara.
Lara speaking. I'm a secondary school teacher. In a previous life, I was a banker. But I saw the light eventually, and I moved away from the dark side and joined the good guys, which was 2 years ago. Which was also the time I met JJ. So that was the same year I retrained as a teacher.
That sounds insane in terms of transition. I kind of want to dig into that in a second a little bit. JJ?
Yes.
So I had trouble with my maths, and there was this very kind person who...
This sounds very creepy now.
No, I'm joking.
This is not who you are and how you met.
No.
Just to clarify. But thanks. Yes. Good joke. No. JJ, can you tell me a little bit about you? Who are you? Where are you from?
Who am I? I'm JJ. I'm from Holland. And recently with the lockdown, but even before, because I've been ill for a bit, I really discovered the joys of cooking, baking, and... plants recently.
Okay, I'm torn here. I could risk something and ask you how you actually got to know each other.
How do we know each other? When was that? 2018?
Oh, yes. So how do we know each other? I spotted her across the bar. I walked over after a couple of pints and I said to her, "Your hair looks fab." And she responded with, "Thank you." And I thought, that's the end of that conversation. And now we've been living together for couple of months.
So the way it really happened, that this is like the narrative that fits JJ. So that the way it really happened was the couple of pints was probably more like what, six?
No, a couple.
And she came over and she was holding on to the post because she couldn't stand properly anymore.
Oh, and then she called it pole dancing.
And then she leaned over and said, "Yeah, it looks fab." And I thought, wow, she's really hot, but I'm not sure she's receptive to any sort of proper chat. So I just said, "Thank you." Made a mental note that this should continue some other time.
In terms of that mental note, also that "thank you" came out whilst the chin was arching upwards.
Well, she was hovering above me. I was sitting down.
You know that bit in The Devil Wears Prada when she goes, "That'll be all," and she like dismisses you, like the big lady in The Devil Wears Prada. She said, "Oh, that'll be all." That was what it was like.
That's hilarious. So it was like having an audience with the Queen whilst being drunk.
Exactly. It's not far from it. Yeah. No.
Wow. Something tells me you're missing a huge chunk, because you were just saying and then suddenly we moved in. And whenever I ask people how they got together in our community, it's like, "I met her, I saw her, I said something, and then we moved in." And it is frustrating because they're always missing out the crucial mid part.
Yeah. The second date, bring a moving van. It wasn't that bad. It took us a while.
It took us a year after that, almost exactly.
A year? All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is happening when? In April at some point, I think, or in May, early May. Anyway, so I made a mental note that this conversation should continue because she was really good looking and she was funny. Wasn't really sober that night, you know, so maybe I did catch her for a proper conversation.
Sorry, neither were you. But we still had banter.
Yeah, we still had banter.
Yeah.
So I started talking to her. So this is all part of a group that meets regularly, where people talk about stuff. So we met up the week after that, and and then we started talking, and then we started bantering, and that was really fun, wasn't it?
Yes.
I think we talked. I mean, we chatted. We enjoyed the banter.
It was good fun, definitely.
So who made the first move then in the end?
This is also a good one.
Well, so I wanted to go out on a date, but I didn't have the balls, so to speak, to ask. One evening...
Unique selling point if you ask me, but yeah, go on.
Yeah. So one evening, it got later and later, and people started going home. And then there was, I think, like five or six people left. I can't remember anymore, but I was thinking, okay, now I have to do something because, you know, the bar closed. So we're standing in the street. It's about midnight. And of course, the other people very nicely and suspecting nothing, I was saying, sorry, you know, are you walking that way, or which tube are you taking, and whatever. What I really wanted to say was, you just go, you know, just go that way, and I go this way with that one. But I wanted to make it look like an accident, so that was. So I said something very stupid, like, I'm just gonna walk. But that was really stupid because this is happening in North London, and at the time I lived in Surrey, so that would have been a long walk.
No, you didn't say walk. Sorry if I may cut in, but just to paint a picture, it was June. It was a heat wave. I was on my bike, cycling home for about half an hour to my then home. So I was like, yeah, fine. We've been to the bar. We had a lovely time. You know, let's go. You know, everyone's going home. And for some reason, you were all dressed up in some business suit of some sort.
Yeah, I had a business meeting before.
And
obviously an absolute accident.
Yes, obviously. Yeah.
Well, that really was an accident. I learned later she liked business suits. That was a happy accident.
But you can kind of paint a picture of me, my t-shirt and jeans on a bike, you know, heading home. And I go, no, I'm going that way. And me thinking, what tube station is that way? Like, where are you pointing at?
I was pointing at your bike.
Oh, right. So... then you said,
so anyway, then they walked away and it was slightly awkward, and then I said to her, do you want to go for a drink? And she said, yeah, cool. And then I realized, shit, all the bars have closed in the vicinity, and I could think of maybe two, something like that, that might still be open. So I dragged her in both of them, and both were closed. It was not going well.
Also, one is the poshest bar you can ever imagine in North London. And I just stood there with my bike, like, rattling, you know, in jeans and, like, a scrunchy T-shirt with holes in it.
Anyways, so we ended up going to Camden, of all places. She went on her bike. And I convinced her I'm taking the tube. But the tube wasn't running anymore, so I got stranded.
Again, another accident.
And then we went to Camden and had a few more drinks until 3 a.m. or something. And then I talked my way into her flat, basically.
Oh, wow. How did you do that?
Oh, you want to know details.
I want to learn. I think this is a very educational episode, to be honest.
You need to research your target.
Yes, so you researched your target, as in JJ.
JJ, I knew she was a very helpful character who would never let anyone down, never let anyone stranded. So we left the pub.
JJ, also known as Mother Teresa. Here you go.
Yes.
The damsel in distress whisperer.
You know it after all. So why do you say you don't?
I can't say that JJ has ever been my target, but now that you mention
it. So other targets have other weaknesses. You just exploit them.
This is getting deep.
I don't feel objectified whatsoever. Please continue.
So what was it? Oh, yes. So I thought, what do I do?
We left that bar because it got a bit grimy, or at least it was a bit, you know, dodge. And then we said, oh, let's go. And we went outside and you flipped out your phone like an Uber. I was like, oh, you know, it's far away. You know, how much is an Uber? Jeez, like, if you're going to pay that, you might as well stay at mine. She's like, all right. And I was like, okay, that was quick.
Okay, you convinced me.
And then, yeah, we went to hers. And then she pretended to make the bed in the guest room.
I didn't pretend. I actually made the bed in the guest
room. She actually made the bed in the guest room and I watched her do it.
Can we stop here? Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, maybe we stop. No. I obviously don't want to know if you ended up sleeping in the bed in the guest room, but I find it very impressive. Like, hypothetically speaking, if you didn't end up sleeping there, then I'm very impressed with the fact that you watched her make the bed, because that would indicate a lot of respect for each other. Anyway, I can't go into detail there, because I don't know.
You don't know?
Yeah, I don't want to know. I think nobody wants to know at this point. We want to preserve that moment for you guys.
I think it's safe to say that you didn't sleep that night. So regardless where that was.
No one slept that night.
No one slept that night. I think we'll be happy with that.
That's a bit of an oversight.
Moving swiftly.
I thought we were going to talk about
the lockdown and all that.
Yeah, you know, the theoretical concepts of being queer and all that. Like, no. Just tell me, you know, your most Yeah, go on.
This was long before the lockdown. Good old days where people were in pubs.
Well, but this is also an interesting lesson because... I'm not sure whether that was, I think it was earlier, you tried to ask me out on a date, but I genuinely didn't get it. So you texted me and you said, oh, she tried to make it into a competition and I'm the least competitive person.
Oh, yeah.
In many a friend circle. So you said something like, oh, it's lovely weather. Who can do the most push-ups, you or me? Like, whoever wins gets the other one a bottle of wine. We'll go to Hampstead Heath, like, do a push-up challenge and, like, whoever wins get the other one a bottle of wine. And I just responded with, like, if you want a bottle of wine that badly, I'll buy one.
There comes the damsel in distress syndrome type thing again. It's like, let's not compete. Let me just buy you a bottle of wine. Let me save you.
Yeah, let's spare a thought for the poor woman who's trying to ask the other one out without being seen to be asking
her out. Who asks anyone out? Like, do you want to do push-ups? It's just really odd, isn't it?
Lesbians. I remember having a similar situation once. I remember... when I was trying to ask somebody out, I was actually probably doing arm wrestling. Not push-ups, but arm wrestling. And then if that didn't work, we did how long can you keep your eyes open contest, which was really clever, I thought, because there are scientific studies that show that if you look somebody in the eyes for more than 30 seconds, they kind of like are more inclined to like you or even maybe get infatuated with you.
I read that too.
So, is there also... study that says like if the other one does like push-ups in front of you and you buy them a bottle of wine, they're game? I don't know,
but I would trust Lara on this one. She's a very clever lady. She probably thought that through. So, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought that was a really cunning plan and it went horribly wrong. Spare a thought for the poor woman, right? I mean, you know, nobody cares about me. I'm saying, oh, yeah, let's do this and that and that. And it would have been a really fun afternoon. And then she goes, if you're so desperate for a bottle of wine, I'll buy you one.
Well, I never get competition. No one informed me there would be a moment in terms of push-ups. Like, it's just...
Don't like push-ups. I mean, I don't like push-ups. It would not be my thing.
Push-ups. Lara doesn't like push-ups.
Arm wrestling is good too.
What are you doing with arm wrestling, JJ?
Arm wrestling?
No, the best thing is if you just say, I would like to go out with you. Would you like to share a bottle of wine with me? But, you know, who has that courage? I don't.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, here we are. You are together. You live together and you're in lockdown together, which is good because that means you still get to have tactile contact and another human being around you. Do lots of push-ups, yes. So, like, in terms of, like, your individual journey to coming out as queer, lesbian, bisexual, I don't know, what are your labels? How do you kind of, like, relate to labels in general?
Unfortunately, the honest answer is I genuinely do not know. I think it changed over time as well. So when I was younger, I was convinced I was bisexual, and I think I genuinely was because I genuinely fancied men as well. So I dated both men and women, and I really liked dating the men, so I didn't just do it because society expected it of me or anything like that. And I had really, really lovely boyfriends. And then it sort of changed and I went off the men and dated women.
I don't know anymore. I think, what's the word if you fancy the person? And
pansexual.
Yeah. Does that mean that you go for the person rather than their gender?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's what I am. Because when I think about if I was single, I would just want a certain connection with a person, and I would not limit myself to just looking around one gender. Why would you exclude 50% of the population anyway?
Oh, well, you know, it's, it depends.
I mean, if you genuinely don't fancy the one gender, then of course that's what you have to do. But
it happens. Some people change their mind, or they don't change their mind, but it happens, or they do meet the right man, or they do meet the right woman, or whichever you want to call it. It's a spectrum, as they say nowadays, spectrum.
But then I've never understood labels anyway. I, for example, I've never understood the difference between pansexual and bisexual.
No, I understand that.
Okay.
So, correct me, Jess, if I'm wrong, but I think if you're bisexual, you've got particular features of a woman or a man, which are a male or masculine or feminine, that you find particularly attractive. So there's particular things about women and particular things about men you find really attractive.
But I'm not entirely sure. I think everybody that I've met who's bisexual or pansexual kind of seems to define it in their own way. And that's just as okay as anything. But personally, from my experience, I think that there is a huge Venn diagram and overlap between pansexuality and bisexuality. The only difference is that pansexuality kind of includes gender and the discourse around gender, whereas bisexuality and its history, and by the mere fact that it's a longer standing term, maybe to a degree, often gets a bit of a bad rep around gender inclusivity or non-binary inclusivity. But to me, it's the equivalent of basically saying to a lesbian, you're not inclusive of non-binary people. And nobody really knows that because it's so personal. You know, every pansexual person can be lesbophobic or inclusive. So there is all this sort of like fluidity in terms of labels that is just being disregarded sometimes. And I think there's more that unites people then it divides them. And I think we are sometimes engaging in a little bit of nitpicking around this sort of avatar thinking of labels. It's like, this is my flag, this is my tribe, and this is how I'm different. But in reality, we should maybe, from my perspective, concentrate more on unity, because it's like a label is a personal thing. If you prefer saying you're pansexual, be my guest. I'll celebrate that just as much as if you think you're bisexual or feel bisexual and have the same values attached to it or different values attached to it. It's just my experience is you can't, from hearing a person identify with a certain label, then equally conclude what their values are, because they're, again, down to the individual. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. I'm now more confused than ever.
I'm so sorry.
No, I was just thinking. Then I probably said the wrong thing.
No, you didn't. And I think that is a symptom of the times as well. That within the queer community or lesbian community, we all constantly kind of like correct each other and make each other feel like we're saying the wrong things. And if it's your experience and if it's your relationship with the label, then it can't be wrong. Just as much as I identify more with the label lesbian, doesn't mean that my set of values around that label would be the same as the set of values of a different lesbian from a different time period, maybe. It's like saying, okay, basically this is sort of the comparison I can come up with. If I say I'm a celiac, everybody knows what that means. No, it means you can't tolerate gluten. It's like you can't tolerate gluten. There is no ifs and buts because it's a physiological thing. If I say I'm a feminist, it already means something different to every person out there that calls themselves a feminist, because the values are so... I don't know, it's a huge differential type of diffuse type of term where depending on your geography or your upbringing or your generation, you will have different values attached to it. And it's kind of the same with lesbian, bisexuality, even the word queer, you know, it means different things to different people. And I think that's what we need to sometimes inquire about more, which is why I was asking you that question. It's like, what does it mean to you? Because it's your values that are going to be interesting for any conversation, I guess.
It's probably controversial to say, but we were talking about this the other day. One of the things about lockdown is that the most stupid things become a big thing to do. Like, but we were using our daily allowance to go out and going shopping. And we really celebrate the opportunity to go to Tesco's around the corner and do our shopping. So we were on our way, and then we were talking about these things. I don't know. So to me, it seems like, is it wrong to not think about these things too much, or not for these things not to mean anything to me? I don't know. I can't think of any label that I would like to identify with. I would ideally love to live in a world where absolutely no one cares who I fancy and who I date, and what that means for my identity. And also, I think we were joking that we're now going queer shopping or something like that. Do you remember saying that?
Queer shopping. Interesting.
No, yeah, well, we were teasing each other. I was saying to her, what does shopping mean to you as a queer person? Do you identify as a queer shopper? You know, something along these lines.
Yeah, but like, so how do you identify as a queer person? And I think, Jess, you talked in an earlier podcast, or you talked to me before, and you said, oh, what is it like to be queer? And I was like, it's just the same lockdown for everyone. It's not like I feel particularly queer in lockdown. And I do recognise I'm in a very privileged position, and some people are in a closet, or they have a hard time, or, you know, they struggle with particular labels. But I feel I'm at a point where I don't really care about labels. I feel they're more important for other people, and I don't particularly mind if people call me or want to label me. There's always more people than there is words, than there are labels. So
I think it's probably also important to add that we're speaking from the very privileged position of two people living today in the first world.
Yeah.
In a city like London, where you can probably ignore these things and choose not to make them part of your identity much easier than, yes, a gay woman 30, 40 years ago. Or in certain parts of the world today, I think it's a very different issue.
If we go to Pride, we have a lovely time. There's a big party. We have a couple of beers, and there's a, you know, it's a nice atmosphere. If you go to Pride in, let's say, Turkey, you'll get, you know,
you get
phosphor bombs at you, or whatever they throw at you. So it's a luxury to say, oh, you know, labels are not important. They are important. They're very, very important. Mm. I think owning a label is very important. You also ask, what did it mean to us? Well, I'm happy to announce that we are in such a privileged position that we could say, like, living a queer life doesn't particularly mean anything to me. I mean, I'm just me. We're just humans.
I'm kind of struck with the fact that you still... There must be an element. I mean, I get it too. Like, I don't wake up in the morning and think, oh, I'm a lesbian. Or I don't go to the shop and think, here is a lesbian doing her daily grocery shop. Or I don't, you know, well, even if I sleep with a woman, I don't think, oh my God, I'm such a lesbian right now. It's not like that. But then you seek out community that is queer. And I think that's when the label becomes important, maybe. Or the first world type of scenario, like finding people where you don't have to do the sort of like, this is what being a lesbian means disclaimer. It's kind of nice. Nice to know also, like, just on a pure sort of like empirical level. I mean, you're not going to find other lesbians or queer people in a straight sort of like population that easily. So to go to community events where there is a higher concentration, just in terms of just potential, is important, because we are only 10% of the, you know, population, allegedly.
That is very important. But now you talk about community, not about what does queer life mean to you.
But I guess, yeah, no, that's true. But I guess community is the thing that demands us to label ourselves.
Does it, though?
I don't know. Does it? If you didn't know that I was gay or a lesbian, and that I go to community groups that are geared towards that, you and I probably wouldn't have met.
True.
Yeah, that is true.
True. But then, you know, I'm really, you know, privileged, honoured, and extremely happy to have you as a friend. But then I feel community is very important, but the label that's attached to that community, even though I feel strongly, because we are a minority, you should seek to connect one way or another. So I think there's a real value in that. But apart from that, does it really, I don't mean to diminish it. And we have the resources here. So that's the thing I'm slightly, we are privileged as well, is what I'm trying to say. So if you're born, you're gay or not gay or straight or ban or bi or, you know, the whole LGBTQIIPT, another P, I think, I'm not quite sure.
LGBTQIA plus, let's just go for that.
Oh, the plus is good. So whichever card you pull from that one, you'll have to live with that card, you know, the rest of the game, the rest of the life. So
do you?
Yeah, I mean, you can switch in, get another card, but there's always going to be something attached to it. But alternatively, like if I look at my sisters, they have particular qualities which have to do with their identity or their character in a different way, which doesn't mean their sexuality, because both of them are straight. But they have to play their cards as well. So there's particular stigmas attached to other things as well.
Yeah, being a woman, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
all kinds of walks of life. Yeah.
Being tall, being short, yeah. Being, you know, whichever. So I think, again, I think we live a very privileged life, definitely here in London. The amount of, you know, shit you get for being gay is
very limited.
Very limited.
Let's just assume for a second that labels didn't exist and you didn't know even of the existence of same-sex relationships. For some reason, there would still be that intrinsic pull towards it. Like if you were to live in a village somewhere in the middle of nowhere, I don't know, in a place where there is no gay bar, you would still find a person that is attracted, that is maybe identifying as a woman and attracted to other women. So the behavior doesn't go away. The desire doesn't go away. It's just the label that kind of like summarizes it. And I guess it can be an empowering thing just as much as it can be a limiting thing. And it's kind of shifted. But I'm also aware of people and friends in Hungary, for example, or in Saudi Arabia, where the label itself is a massive risk to life and livelihoods.
Yeah. Well, that is true. But there's definitely something about growing up knowing that you're different from all the rest, because one very important factor of mental health is feeling connected to others. And if you do not feel connected to others, and even worse, if you don't understand how that works and why that is, then you're going to struggle more. So if you grow up as, say, the only gay person that you know somewhere in
the only gay person in the village
the only gay person in the village in a country that is not particularly friendly towards that sort of thing, or where it's a criminal offense, even worse, then you're gonna have a really hard time being who you are. So yes, of course, there the label matters enormously.
The connection part is really important, because you talk about people growing up in a village, and I'm not entirely the same. I did grow up in a village, but I met gay people. I never connected to them. I felt I had very little with them in common until I met, you know, the community groups here, and I felt I had more in common with them. I feel we need to learn and also teach people to connect to others, regardless or despite their labels. So I feel I had an easy coming out kind of thing, because I felt connected to my family. I felt connected to my friends. So I knew to some extent, you know.
Well, you knew that the connection wouldn't get lost.
Yeah, exactly. So it overarches kind of the sexuality. And I think apart from, yes, we are different because we are queer, but also we need to learn that we're not that different. We've got many other things in common, whether it be a love for music or a love for literature, or we really like the same shitty telly, or, you know, there's something in another person. I feel strongly about this, that regardless of their sexuality or regardless who they date, that we would be able to connect to.
But it depends. I think it depends very much on your previous experiences in life, and probably also a little bit connected to, it's not just with older people, but I think if you are older, then you are more likely to think that you feel more safe in your own community.
I don't know. I think you make an important point about your earlier experiences in life as well. And I've been thinking about that for quite a while, because you might be aware of this, but there used to be in psychotherapy and other psychological disciplines this sort of like stereotype that gay and queer people and lesbians have a life of hardship, a life of suicidality, a life of childhood trauma that preceded the sexuality, ounces of pseudo wisdom that are out there. And it's quite funny when you kind of like contrast that with what Freud thought, which was that everybody is intrinsically born bisexual. And that certain things then shape things differently and turn people straight or gay or bisexual or whatever. So I think there has been a huge amount of pathologizing that has been done with sexuality as a label phenomenon or whatever you want to call it. And even the pursuit in the gay community, sometimes to kind of like find out if it's nature or nurture or a bit of both. And people kind of trying to prove that it's nature because that would give them a different standpoint. And in many ways, legally has also legitimized gay marriage in the US. I think that was one of the main arguments that it's nature. I personally, I'm thinking it's so important to know where you've come from and what has shaped you. But I think also sometimes it's a chicken versus egg debate, and I don't care about it anymore. But I used to really, really, really want to know why I'm gay. Did you ever have that
really? Sort of thing?
Yeah, I really wanted to know why I'm gay.
Oh no. Oh God, I've never had that interest. I just knew I was different. But I've classic story of growing up as a tomboy. I've got two sisters who are definitely not tomboys. So, you know, you're slightly different, but I've never wondered why. It just is. So I've accepted it more for what it, I don't know. I'd never had a problem with it as far as I would go, oh, what did I do wrong? Like,
no, but I sometimes wondered too, like my sister and I grew up with the same parents in exactly the same house with the exact same things. And she could not be more straight. I mean, she's just such a typical straight woman. And I'm not. And I'm convinced it's nature. It is nature to a large extent. But I think, having said that, how much you focus on your sexuality is probably also a function of your early experiences and the messages you receive around that, the things that you soak up, the experiences that may be good or bad. I remember talking to two different friends, and they are, interestingly enough, also very different generations. So one of them is a gay woman in her early 30s, and the other one is a gay woman in her 70s. And the younger one told me that she does not want to have anything to do with straight people. She just doesn't want to engage with them. She doesn't want them in her life. And sometimes she has to deal with them at work, but that's about it. When she goes to parties, she makes sure that she finds the gay people in the room and hangs out with them. All her friends are gay, male or female, but they're just gay. She does not have any straight friends. They go on her nerves.
She said it's just easier that way.
And she did say, I mean, she did tell me about experiences where, I mean, she obviously didn't have very good encounters with straight people, the way it sounds. And the other one is entirely the opposite. The older friend, she said, for her, whether somebody is a potential friend or not, I mean, forget the romantic partners, just to seek the company of somebody, for her, it is much more important that this person likes music and literature and art than whatever their sexuality is. So she'd much rather hang out with straight people who like music, art, and literature than with gay people who couldn't care less about this. And she is from a time where she had lots of problems being gay. I mean, she was physically abused in the street during pride parades. She had to be in the closet for a long time because it was a criminal offense to be gay, and all the rest of it, and could never bring any partners home and that sort of thing. So it's really interesting. And I thought about myself, and I think I'm more like, I would like to know that I can connect to gay people, but if I really had to choose, I mean, I've met quite a few gay people where I thought we have literally nothing in common other than the fact that we like sleeping with the same gender.
I mean, but the same goes for straight people. It's just people. Some people are like, yeah, you're a twat, bye. Well, you know, after like 30 seconds, so you're like, okay, I'm going to avoid you for the rest of the evening, which is fine too.
Yeah.
I mean, happy-go-lucky, just, you know, pick your battles. And other people, you're like, oh, I really like you. You're interesting. You've got something to tell, or you're funny, or you've got a way of listening, or you've got a way of saying. And it's completely, well, at least for me, but again, I speak from a privileged point of view. So again, it's completely irrelevant whether I'm gay or straight. Like, yeah, they usually notice I'm gay at some point because I look quite gay, or, you know, I talk about my girlfriend or whichever. And if they're completely horrified about that, well, you know, they're either very uneducated or not very nice people. But that rarely happens because that connection already makes that you weed out the...
But you know what I find really wrong is on both sides, like this, whether it's a straight person or a gay person. And I think there is a kind of straightophobia in the gay community as well.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I've seen it so often that somebody, gay or straight, does something you don't like. They have certain traits you just don't like. And people say, oh, these straight people, they are like that. Oh, come on. I mean, not all straight people are like that. And equally, when they say it to us, though, oh,
yes,
you know,
so, yeah.
Our gay women are also whatever.
I like that fucking guy. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then we're super offended and we cry homophobia. But I hear so often comments passed on straight people generalizing them as a whole in the gay community, and that doesn't seem to be a problem at all.
This is super interesting. I mean, I don't know. It's treat people how you want to be treated. That's just my mantra. And I'm kind of therefore not particularly somebody who would use the word phobia attached to. I think the word phobia has a time and place, particularly when it comes to the DSM and psychology. Let's talk about phobias, agoraphobia, yeah. Arachnophobia, all that sort of stuff. But it's a bit of a thing that grates on me when we're talking about Islamophobia, homophobia.
That's very true because
if it comes from a place of fear, then let's talk about it, and it's probably a passive and almost compulsive thing psychologically speaking. But if it comes from a place of hatred, then it's not a phobia.
How would you call it then?
I don't know. I just call it discrimination based on the behavior, and I'd individualize it. I would not want to generalize a whole population, subgroup, or minority for it. But that's my personal opinion, and it might change again, and feel free to challenge me on that. But I personally don't think that generalizations are helpful in any form, because in a sense they contribute to dehumanization and us versus them thinking. And I think neither party benefits from that. I mean, if it enables us to talk about taboos, then go for it. It's so important to obviously talk about discrimination if it happens in mass forms. But I agree with you. I always cringe a little bit when some people shout homophobia and then in the same breath act, and now I'm going to use the word xenophobically or racist or whatever.
Yeah, it's true. But also, I have to admit that ever since I'm openly gay and ever since I'm with someone and it's clear, like, oh, how's your boyfriend doing? Or you live together, or I live with a girlfriend or whichever. I expect the most shit from a particular corner. So I have to be very careful as well that it doesn't make me, and again, the word phobia is wrongly used in this word, but it doesn't make you prejudiced towards particular
groups of people.
Minorities, groups of people within society, which are usually from the same corner, that make some sort of remark about it. You go, here we go again. Yeah.
Well, empirically, we will have all had experiences with different corners and different people. Like, that doesn't mean we can generalize. Like, I personally have had really bad experiences with Germans. I am German myself. So I think there's a sensitivity in my case towards the fact that it's my experience that's shaped my opinions there. And maybe there is a taboo around certain groups or people being homophobic. But then, yeah, I personally think that individualizing helps me more than generalizing, simply based on the fact that if I look a certain discriminatory perpetrator in the eye and say, you're just an asshole right now, it makes it easier than if I have to waste time thinking that there could be a whole population that has the same issue. Wow, this is going to be a whole different discussion.
Yeah, we could
I don't have enough drinks for that. Can I ask you a question, though? Like, you said earlier, Lara, that you think it's nature. Let me just jump back to that. Can I just ask what got you into that sort of like corner of thinking? What made you think that?
I mean, a few things. And it may be just my limited experience, and I would be very interested in proper studies on that. And I think there are more and more of those. But every gay person that I met, and there are a lot of them, tells me that they knew from a very, very early age even if they couldn't define it at the time and didn't know what it was, but they knew that something was different. And people say that they have been reacting to, probably around puberty, more strongly than before, but they have been reacting to very different things than their straight peers. And I remember that about myself. And I think looking back, it's also quite interesting to understand with hindsight why you were feeling and thinking certain things in your childhood and adolescence that didn't make much sense at the time, but once you knew you were gay, tends to make more sense then. And as I was thinking about these things for myself, I was talking to a friend about gender in general. And we had just met a person who was completely adamant there can only be two genders, right? So there's either women or men, and there is no such thing as in between. And, you know, the, what did he say exactly? I can't remember his exact words, but it was sort of like, well, you either have the bits that make you a man or you have the bits that make you a woman. And yes, you can change it around with medical science, but it's, you know, it's either that or that, right? And this person wasn't even particularly transphobic. They just did not really understand how gender comes about. And my friend had happened to look into that, and she showed us both a video, which I thought was amazing, where I think it's a German communications professional. I have to look her up, what her exact name is. I forget it now. But she had a lecture which went on for about an hour and a half. And rarely have I seen anything that interesting in my life, where she talked so eloquently, so interestingly about how a baby in the womb of its mom receives certain hormones from the mom. And depending on the quantities and the makeup, and these things do change. So depending on how these floods are composed and the timing of them, it very much influences the sexuality of the baby, and it very much influences the gender identity of the baby. And the scientific conclusion of it was that there actually wasn't such a thing as male or female. There was a spectrum where the babies came out on one side or the other or somewhere in between. And that is completely independent of the genitals you're born with. So it's not really a question of lowering your trousers and seeing if you're a male or a female in black and white and that's it. And I didn't know that. And I can't explain it very well because I don't know the details of the study anymore. But I thought it's something I had never considered. And this person who before that was the most adamant, you know, the most adamant opinionated person about you're either that or that, completely changed their mind. I mean, it's also kudos to them that they were able to think about something completely alien to their opinion so far, and were able to listen, but also that the concept was so powerful and is powerful enough for it to be stronger than any long-held opinions and beliefs. And I wish more people would watch that sort of thing. Actually, you should make it compulsory in schools to watch that sort of thing. That would probably take care of a lot of prejudice.
I'm just thinking, you know me, I always like to play devil's advocate sometimes. And if you had said something else, I'd probably take the other side. I think what we're talking about there is gender expression, gender identity, and biological sex, which are three different spectrums, and one of which is sometimes portrayed as binary, which is the biological sex based on our endocrine systems, based on our genitals and secondary sexual markers, blah, blah, blah. But there's another study which I read, and I really want to hear what the source for what you were talking about was. And we'll post a link below the episode's description. But yeah, so the thing that I kind of like sometimes think about is the fact that I was born having very tomboyish gender expression from a very early age, probably 3 or 4. And I know for a fact that my mother had testosterone injections while she was pregnant. So that's quite an interesting one. I've heard the hormone theory too, and they correlate testosterone exposure, particularly with more masculine gender expression later on, or also female sort of homosexuality. But what I always found kind of terrifying is the fact that I was a very masculine expressing child. I refused to wear dresses. I had a certain haircut. I would climb trees. I had a male name even. It's quite embarrassing. I chose a male name. I walked around town being mistaken for a boy. I had all the hallmarks of what now would be seen as a transgender child. But I never ever kind of understood the concept of not being male or not being female. For me, it was during puberty that I kind of made peace with my femininity and definitely identified as a woman, which kind of sometimes terrifies me because there are studies that show that 80% of children that express differently in terms of their gender identity or in terms of, you know, gender expression being contrary to their born sex, that these kids end up kind of like later on making peace with their original sort of like birth gender, whatever you want to call it. And just turn out gay. And that is exactly what happened for me. And when I hear these studies, I find them so intriguing. And I think it's so important that people have a sense of self-determinism and freedom and rejoice in whatever gender they feel the closest to or gender identity that, you know, kind of defines them and suits them best. Or, you know, there are some people that where it is no question that they were just born into maybe the wrong body or have a different sort of relationship to their gender. In my case, however, I feel really, really kind of retrospectively worried that if I had been born to different parents in a different time, I could have maybe transitioned pre-puberty into something that then would have caused me more grief. Because another thing that's happening that we're not talking about is the phenomenon of detransitioning. People who have...
Exactly. But you're not being devil's advocate, actually, because this is pretty much what this lecturer was talking about. I think the point was that there is a spectrum and it's not either that or that. And it has very little to do with the bits you have and what you want to change. And by the way, it's quite spooky because I think I grew up exactly the same way as you did. I was in a small village in Austria. And I was very tomboyish. I refused to wear dresses. I refused to wear skirts. I never played with toys that are female, in inverted commas. I liked to run around. I liked to play football. I cut my hair very short. And I remember very clearly around the age 8, 9, 10, something like that, that I really, really, really wanted to be a boy. And I had a male name, and when I was somewhere where no one knew me, I introduced myself as a boy, and I was delighted when everybody thought that I was one, so I passed as one.
Feeling
that was great. And but I never felt uncomfortable in my body, if that makes sense. So I never actually wanted the male bits. I never felt wrong in my female body. I just wanted to be a boy because it seemed more like me.
Well, to me, I'm going to be very honest, from the age of 7, I had crushes on girls. So for me, it was the way to get reach the girls.
That's actually what I wanted to say now. I wonder with hindsight if that was also to some extent induced by my environment, that one way to justify the things I liked and needed and wanted for myself was determined for boys and not for girls.
I really relate to that. And I think it's really important to point out that this is such a complex area that we can only speak from our own experiences. And I know there are people out there who have gender dysphoria, which I think as a term will probably die out because it's a very pathologizing term again, which is quite interesting. Yeah. But I didn't have that like you. Like, to me, my body was sacred and I really liked my body. And there was not necessarily a sense of, oh, God, this is horrible.
No, not at all.
But it'd be interesting to hear different experiences there. And I'm sure somebody who's genderqueer or somebody who's transgender would have different stories to tell. And I think it's truly an empirical thing. Like, we don't want to not support our people out there who kind of like have had different experiences and who really need recognition for their gender identity. So just to point that out. But yeah, thanks. How about you, JJ? How is your relationship to that sort of thing? Like, do you think it's nature or nurture?
I think it's a mix of both, but mostly nature. But then I remember this one story, and my auntie, to which I'm very close, she said she tried to describe to me a particular lady in her church that is very active. She does a lot of things for the church, and she's a particular character. She's very direct. I would almost say iconic. And my auntie was describing this lady, and she's a lot older, so I would say 70, something like that. And she dresses up for church, and she goes to church every Sunday, and they drank coffee together, and they worked together, and whichever. And she said, oh, you know, if she'd lived today, if she was young today, she'd be a lesbian, but she's not. And
wow.
There's a particular, no, but she's probably like the thing that she, first of all, I love my auntie. She's very, very, I'm very close to her. She's very deep.
If your auntie lived today, she'd be a lesbian for that lady?
Oh, no. The lady would be a lesbian. Oh, sorry,
that's, I just, yeah. What a shame. No. What a loss.
Yeah, no. My auntie's very cool, but also very happily married, but my uncle. She said, sorry, to clarify, if that lady lived today as a younger person, she'd probably be gay or she'd probably be a lesbian. My mother tongue is not English, so she said it slightly different, but, you know, that was the gist of it.
Yeah, wow.
I really, really liked that. And for some, like, she explained to her that she was a very local lady, so she was very active in church, she was very active in the local community, she talked in a particular way, she, you know, particular things that you recognize from being home. If you have that particular accent, if you go to these particular shops, if you use these particular words for particular things, you have that local kind of character. And I really hope this lady is happy. I don't know. She seems all right from what I've heard. I don't know her personally, but she's alone and she lives on her own. So I think there's two sides to that story. If you say nature, the place where I'm from, that used to be the place that this lady is from, is now very different. So I have the chance to go places and to see people and to meet people and to learn about stuff.
The nurture's Whereas, changed.
Your nurture's changed, exactly. And also potential's changed and opportunities have changed and things that drive particular people have changed as well. And I find it comforting to know that this lady is not like me. I wouldn't say like me, but she seems to be happy and functioning within a community. And even though, you know, some people say, oh, I wish she'd come out and done the whole gay thing. And I understand that. But also, I think you need to respect people that grow up and become adults and function in their own adult lives within the community they know and with the opportunities they recognize as the people they are.
I know exactly what you mean. That whole thing just reminded me of something that I experienced when I was maybe 17 or 18. I was pretty much the only gay in the village in my hometown at the time. And it was not talked about. I remember not ever seeing any sort of like gay people or anything. But one evening, and I'm sorry if I go on a bit of a tangent here, but it's really kind of like triggered the story. One evening I was listening to music and I heard this singer, Dusty Springfield, and I wasn't particularly fluent in English at the time. And I looked up who she was and was terribly drawn to her for some reason, not necessarily in terms of fancying her, just her whole story, her voice, everything. It's funny how even when you don't know you're gay, you kind of like get drawn to these sort of like pinpoints and people that have a connection to the community. And before I knew it, I was kind of like on this forum. At the time, I think it was called the Dusty Springfield Community, and we were posting. This is terribly cringy, but...
No, not at all.
I rose the ranks. Eventually, I was the administrator of the forum, and I met my first girlfriend through that community, you know, every 4th of April. I don't know even if it was the 4th. 4th or 16th in April. Someday, there would be Dusty Day, and we all traveled to Henley up on Thames to kind of like commemorate her death. It was a proper little nerd music fan crowd, but 90% of them, I would say, were queer or gay. And that included older people, which was really interesting. And one lady arrived at the forum straight, married to a man, having worked in, you know, banking all her life. And then throughout the time, she hooked up with another forum member who lived in Australia. And they had this huge affair, and she ended up divorcing him and coming out as lesbian and everything, age 60, which is insane. So that's sort of the age range of maybe older people who would have been denied the nurture that's conducive to also kind of like self-determinism and coming out as gay. And it was really interesting because there was another lady who was older on the forum, and I was a bit naughty. I was obviously talking. I was friends with the lady who had come out as gay and had divorced her husband. And she said, you know what? I got the weirdest message from this other lady the other day who kind of said, kind of really judged her for having left her husband. And essentially she said, you know, you're not the only one, but not all of us have the luxury of doing that. And ooh. I thought, shit, you know, there is another life out there that yeah. essentially has been spent under the umbrella of normative straightness for the sake of it, because it was just not allowed. And there was a sense of envy and judgment coming from her towards this other woman who had dared to, at this probably same age, change her life completely and align herself with her sexuality and be proud of it. And that was just such a weird thing to experience, because it was so cross-generational. You could really see the differences in queer expression. And I don't think the forum is going anymore, because obviously Facebook happened and all that sort of stuff. But my first experience of queer community and queer nurture was essentially through the covert type umbrella reason of worshipping Dusty Springfield, who was bisexual, I believe. So yeah, end of story.
No, very interesting story. And also it's very, your story is a bit more, how do you say, it touches bone a bit more than mine.
If you wanted to put it on a philosophical level, you can say, like Arthur Schopenhauer said, many men, well, they were talking about men at the time, but many people, let's say, mistake the limitations of their own mind for the limitations of the world. And that's how it unfortunately goes, doesn't it?
Well, I feel
that's true.
I'm very philosophical and very highbrow, and I, you know, applaud all of which got the Schopenhauer.
No, he's German. That's why I remember.
This is a very German-heavy podcast, I notice.
Very German-heavy podcast.
I'm the counterweight here. I'm happy to do that.
She's Dutch. She doesn't count.
She's still a Germanic of sorts, I guess.
Rude. Very, very rude. The thing is, it's not the limitations of one's mind, but I feel people need to, again, learn. And I'm very optimistic. So I strongly feel people will learn at some point that whatever you limit yourself as doesn't mean that's true. Looking back, and it gives me, again, it's a conflicting message, but I think if I'd been born 50 years ago, that would have been my life.
See, I find that interesting, because I think I'd be gay as fuck. I'd still sleep with them and love women and everything. But I think I would also risk a lot and be in a lot of trouble all the time. But that's just how I know myself.
I think it's closest to me, because I've been alone for 28 years of my life, and I was reasonably happy in doing that. I had many friends, I had family, I had lots of other things that were satisfying. I was happy doing particular things. I was happy helping people. I was happy learning new stuff. I was always very interested in other things, and always had friends that across generations and across genders. Nowadays, I really hope we can create an environment where kids can grow up and they kind of feel safe to make particular choices, or safe to join a Dusty Springfield forum online and saying that.
let me just rectify. It's always safe to join a Dusty Springfield forum online.
Or embrace your funk. Do whatever you like to do. Just do.
Or your Motown.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And having said that, I always wondered, and Jess, maybe you know more about this than I do, but I've heard a lot of stories from gay or LGBTQ plus identifying people that listen to queer artists, or heard particular artists, or, you know, identify with particular poems. particular things created by the community, and they identified with that before they actually realized they were gay themselves. And I always thought, is that a chicken and egg story, or how do you feel about that?
I have no idea. All I know is I really didn't know I was gay, and I remember setting up a website honoring the likes of Ellen DeGeneres, Dusty Springfield, and Katie Tunstall. And I feel somewhat ashamed of the latter, because I think that was just because she gave me queer vibes without knowing. And I think she's quite...
Same here.
She's such
same
a queer here. Beta. Like,
don't worry. You had a rainbow on the bloody first album.
Exactly. So, yeah. But how that kind of came about, I've got absolutely no idea. And I find it really interesting. It's as though even just listening to Dusty Springfield's Son of a Preacher Man, which is an extremely heteronormative song with religion mixed in. You know, the only one who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. That was kind of my queer war cry. I've got no idea. It was like, it just was like a siren calling me.
But the voice and how she says it.
Though. Yeah, exactly. Because it was written for Aretha Franklin, I've heard.
It was, but she was singing it to a dude officially, right? And
Officially, yeah.
But how can you tell from the intonation of the voice that she's singing it to a woman? You can't. Like, at the time, she wasn't even out. I mean, she has been dating women exclusively most of her life. In fact, there is hardly any historical facts out there that prove that she was ever in a relationship with a guy of prominence or meaning. Like, I know most of her girlfriends.
I didn't say she was singing it to a woman.
She might have not.
I was just saying it's the voice itself and the way she sings that made me, a young queer person, think, this one's amazing.
Right. So you heard the Dusty Springfield queer war cry too. Interesting. Maybe it wasn't a war cry. Maybe it was just an attraction thing. Yeah. But so I don't know. I did a lot of gay things way before I knew I was gay. I kind of like had a lot of... pull towards gay people. I remember watching the Ellen DeGeneres sitcom before she ever had come out, kind of religiously thinking, wow, this is something different. Like, it just makes no sense. It's as though there is a subconscious sort of thing going on that goes beyond cognitive types of processes. I don't know.
But isn't it true that everybody, straight people, gay people, every single person in the world seeks out the company and likes to surround themselves with people who are like them, where they pick up certain vibes that they feel comfortable with. And these people obviously give off these vibes. So I don't think it's...
What is a vibe, though? It's not a real thing, is it?
Excuse me, of course it's a real thing. I mean, you Ellen DeGeneres, right? So the way she looked, she talked, the way she dressed, she was so funny and all that. I mean, she didn't have to come out and you didn't consciously know it, but you could see that you had a lot more in common with her than some straight girl all made dolled up in some other soap opera, right?
Possibly. Say it.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we will never truly know, but I think there is something to be said about the fact that you make your mind up about a person within 3 seconds. And
yes.
It's interesting because there is... 30
seconds. Like, they need to open their mouth as well.
Yeah, no, hang on. Actually, there is studies that show that if you were to measure your thoughts and words, you think around 1,200 words per second, whereas we speak obviously only maybe like... Yeah. You can see how many words we can fit into a second. Maybe it's not a second or a minute. I'm not entirely sure, but a ridiculous amount of words can be thought in a very short time. So bearing that in mind, you can kind of like make your mind up within 3 seconds. Processes that are involved in that are probably more based on body language and micro expressions than it is based on words.
Yeah, I agree. What was there first?
Yeah, I think it's magic. Whatever happens, the fact that you pull towards gay things is just magic. We don't know it yet. It's probably one of those things, you know, how they're sending messages into space to make sure that the aliens kind of like find out about whatever humans are up to. Maybe that's what's happening. Like, when Dusty Springfield sings, there's some undiscovered queer dimension going on that kind of like feeds into our programming and kind of like hooks into something that science hasn't discovered yet.
Gay magic.
That's
gay magic. That sounds like a lot of rainbows and unicorns.
Oh, yes.
And push-ups.
We've talked for a long time, and I need to ask you one burning question in sort of like the vein of tradition of this podcast. If you could have a lesbian affair with anybody past, present, fiction, future, if you can come up with a person from the future, that'd be quite interesting. Who would you kind of like have a lesbian affair with? Do you want to go there? Do you really want to?
Is it anyone, like, regardless of consequences, regardless of anything else?
Anyone, regardless of consequences.
Wow. I'd probably say your sister.
What?
Wow. Lara, wow. Can you top that?
Jokes. No. You go. Does my sister know?
Now she does.
To her, but she's very straight. She didn't get it.
Now she does.
Now she does. Well, I'm going first now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Great. Was none of your sisters.
Rude.
One person I find really attractive. I don't know if I would necessarily want an affair, but US Congresswoman, the young one, left wing, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Nice.
She's
one.
Brave. Yeah. She's brainy and intelligent and eloquent, and she's got a good sense of humor. I love watching her. I sometimes find myself going, yeah, exactly, yes. So if she pursued me hard enough and I knew there were no consequences,
you'd be willing to sign in on the Green Deal.
I would be willing to sign, yes.
I love it. I think I might be on board with that, actually.
Ooh,
let's see who gets there first. Anyway, thank you both so much. Have a fantastic rest of the day. And
you don't want to know who JJ would really go off
with. Well, she said your sister. We're taking that.
I was hoping that was a joke, but fine. Thank you. That was fun. I hope you get some good stuff out of it.
Oh, I will. I think, like with everybody, I tend to say that quite often, but I have a feeling we'll have to do this again simply because it was really easy talking to you guys. So. Without alcohol as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.